drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. With the various restrictions around Australia at the moment, it can be hard to get out of your own backyard, somewhat literally in Victoria. But fortunately, it's still possible to travel via art, to see other places and other people and other cultures. A new exhibition at the ANU in Canberra has invited six photographers to be part of an exhibition, Where I Stand. And two of those artists have joined me in the drawing room, which I'm pretty excited about, Dr. Judith Crispin and Michael Jalarud Torres. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Thank Patricia. You.
So where do you see yourself standing in your art? What are the ideas that you're trying to build on? I'll start with you, Dr. Crispin.
Right, that's a really, really big question. I guess that for me, art has changed a lot over the years. And currently, I would say that it's a means by which I can reconcile my family's lost Aboriginal ancestry with the person that I am today and also with the country that I inhabit. It's asking questions about what my obligations and responsibilities to country are now in my particular situation, and also perhaps what the broader community as a whole can gain from a much closer connection with the country.
Michael, what about you? Where does art stand for you?
I guess art, in my case, was a form of healing and also, just a way of connecting back to country, I guess, in my medium of photography. Going through cancer in year 2000, I needed something to, I guess, focus my positive energies into something. And I chose photography a few years later as a way of, escaping the office, going back to the beaches and areas and that, and just using photography as an art form.
Judith, you said something that really connected with me, and I reckon a lot of our audience too, this idea of making connection with your own ancestry and history and telling those stories in your art. How important is that as a form of healing as well for you?
Look, I think it has been very important to me. It's also been very painful for me as well. There are probably families scattered all over this country that have, a conflicted relationship with their ancestry. It's not just that successive genocidal governments took, whole generations from their families. We know those stories. But a lot of the stories we don't know are the families that just lied, to generations saying that their ancestry wasn't Aboriginal, that it came from somewhere else. The process of unpicking those lies is painful. It pits you against people in your own family because, not everybody wants to confront those things. And then, of course, you've got to reconcile yourself with the fact that you belong, that you've benefited from these lies that have happened. So for me, I've put a lot of effort into trying to find a way to forgive myself for being part of that, for benefiting from that erasure of people from my own family for so long. And then to go further than that and to ask myself, if this hadn't happened, if I'd had the immense privilege to grow up in Aboriginal culture, what responsibilities would I feel towards the country? And knowing that I'm never going to have that level of belonging because of my family circumstances, what can I do to try to bridge that gap now myself as an individual? What relationship is possible for an individual and the land that nurtures them? They're the kind of questions I think that I've been trying to ask.
They're big questions, Judith, and those lies you mentioned are part of your story, but you wanted to find your family and your culture. What was it that actually set you on that path?
Actually, it was an Aboriginal friend. I made friends with this remarkable man, Wanta Jumpajimpa, who's a Walpri man when he was in Canberra. I was director at Manning Clark House at the time, and he came to stay with us. And I was telling him, about how long I'd been looking for my family and some of the lengths that I'd gone to, showing up in communities where I knew nobody and asking if they knew who my family was. And he just very gently said to me, the chances of you finding these people are really small. Why don't you just stop and just come to my community and just spend time with these people here and see if that'll help you answer those questions that you have about your relationship with the country, even if you can't find your family path back. And so I did that, and it was the start of this really life-changing friendship with Walpri people who really just, you know, like me, thought that I would never find the traces of my family. I did in the end, but they thought that I wouldn't. And so they just kept saying to me, you don't need a community or a family or a name or a language to know who you are and to know what kind of relationship you want to have with the country. That's between you and the country. And that idea really set me free then, because it felt like this was something that was within my power for the first time, that I could go out into the country and talk to it with my own voice. And I could create my own stories about the country. I didn't have to have a permission slip in order to do that. You know, I didn't have to nail everything down in order to do that. And that was the kind of start of it, because then it became, the truth became this kind of all-consuming thing, you know, where I went, re-energized my search for my grandfather's people and eventually managed to find them.
What an incredible story. Michael, you mentioned that it was the cancer you had as a younger man that brought you to photography, and your recent series, Tether, revisits that time in your life. They're about raising your daughter battling cancer at the same time. That must have been a really challenging thing to do.
Yeah, you know, obviously going through cancer and then surviving and then going through all the emotions of that, and going through depression as well. Took a long time to, I guess, heal physically, but you'd always have those mental scars. But the one shining moment in my life at that time was, yeah, just having that privilege of having my daughter in my life at a, you know, she was a young age, and just that everyday struggle of going to work, providing for her, keeping myself in check, and just going through that whole process of not really acknowledging the trauma that I had mentally, and coming to terms with it later on in life. And I guess always wanted to do a series about it, but couldn't find the right way to do it until, funnily enough, COVID happened, and I thought it was a great way to revisit that series. And I was very lucky to be able to photograph one of my cousins for Tether, and managed to pull off that series in a short time, in a confined space, which kind of made the work stronger in that regards of stripping away all the noise and just really focusing on the colours and the tone of kind of like how my mental space was at that time. You know, seeing the beauty in dark times, and, you know, to move forward, sometimes you have to go through a lot of pain and hurt to grow as a person. It's something that, for that series, was, you know, very personal and very, I guess it's a minefield of emotions. And I was pretty privileged and happy that a lot of people connected with the work, you know, different aspects of it. Yeah, I'm quite proud of that series, just the way that it all came about.
If you're just tuning in, this is The Drawing Room on RN Drive, and my guests are Dr. Judith Crispin and Michael Jalaru-Torres, and we're talking about, well, their work. They're part of an exhibition, Where I Stand. So bringing your own life in and emotions into your art, that must add some pretty different kind of challenges. Are those themes always there in your work, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, even just talking about Tether, you know, it can water up my eyes a bit. But yeah, a lot of my work is definitely trying to illuminate the dark history of not only my life, but also, you know, the people around the Kimberley and that, where we've never really had that. Our story really hasn't been told that well. And our story, you know, needs to be told because, you know, a lot of the stories were quite recent, you know, only 50, 40 years ago. And I saw it upon myself to try and just plant the seed of these stories into people's minds so that they can go on their own journey to find more information, you know, to find the truth about these stories. And then over the years, it's been great seeing other media outlets pick up these stories and just to, you know, bring these stories back into the social conscious again. And I've only just scraped the surface of it, and there's many other stories, many other people who are around who I want to connect with to tell that side of their story. I just see myself as someone who's just, yeah, just planting that idea into the social conscious and hopefully allowing other journalists and stuff to really, you know, dive in deeper to find, you know, the many aspects of those stories, basically.
Judith, I want to talk to you about your work because this exhibition talks about these themes of transformation and identity, history, rebirth, nature, the dream time. Tell me about your connection to these stories and you know, this is obviously, we're talking on radio about what is a really visual medium, but talk me through the kind of work that you've created.
The work that I've created deals with death. It deals with the death of animals and birds primarily, not because that's an end goal, but because honouring the dead is a really difficult thing for anybody to do. And so I'm starting small. If I start with birds and possums, then I might eventually understand how to honour the death of a person. The way that I am seeing these works is a collaboration with country. One of the things that, you know, really struck me when I started spending a lot more time out in the desert was that the work that I had been creating before was a monologue. It was just me, you know, telling people what I thought. It's not really that interesting. And what I was seeing with the old ladies that I was working with, old Walpri painters, was that they were letting the country in. You know, I had a really, really beautiful friend who's passed away now, so I can't say her name, but she used to leave her canvases outside for months and birds would shit on them and dogs would sleep on them and it'd leave marks on the canvas. And then at some point she'd pick that canvas up and then she'd paint and she'd be answering the question that was posed by those marks. So the country was there. And the thing is, you know what? It's not for me to paint Indigenous stories. It's, you know, it's too big a jump given my family history. But I had photography and I thought, well, how can I let country participate in this act of photography that I'm doing? So I made the decision that I would use the materials that the country gave me. And they are, you know, sticks and leaves and mud and cadavers, whatever's just like around, and I put them on old-fashioned emulsion paper in the way that you would make a sun print or something if you were studying photography at school in the 80s. And then I use these other elements, photochemistry and plates of glass with different things on them to then change that image in using my hands and my time. It takes 50 hours sometimes to make these prints, and I sit with that animal or bird as it decomposes during that time. And, you know, this is my way not only of letting country speak, but also to honour the life of that little creature. I did this show recently in Auckland, and we showed some of these animals. And one of the things that I loved about it was that, you know, there'd be these little bats or possums, and they'd either died in the bushfires or they died on the side of a highway, and no one was ever going to give them a second thought. You know, their lives to everybody was irrelevant. And yet here they were floating over Auckland in these gigantic images. And so, yeah, I guess for me, it's about trying to honour life in, and not just as an abstraction, but really try to understand the value of what life is, and to see if there's some way that there's a real, genuine and literal communication between a person and the country. My friend Wanta that I told you about before, he always used to say to me, if you speak to the country will speak back. And I began to realize after a lot of time of thinking about this that that's not a metaphor. You know, these things are quite literal. We've lost that genuine, strong connection with country, and you know, as a species, we're doomed if we can't get it back.
Michael, is that your experience of country in your art as well, that it will speak back to you, that connection that's just been described there by Judith?
Yeah, I mean, you spend enough time on country, I guess you sit and listen more. You can imagine if you go to the same spot or same area over, you know, many times, you first notice everything. You notice all the plants, the animals, the sky and the water and the earth. And over time, you know, you sink into the country. And for me, it was, I guess, educating, you know, people who don't have a feeling for country is, you know, if you go out with a camera and you just take photos of country, sometimes you don't really listen or you don't really see the country. And most times you just have to go, and even if you do have your camera, just sit down and don't take a photo, but actually just sit and just watch, which I do quite a lot of the times, where I'll go and just notice how the country changes in the light, and then decide if I want to take a photo or not. And over time, I realized that I don't have the patience to take a perfectly sharp landscape image. It just wasn't me. So I decided to become more abstract and experimental. With some of my works with the landscape, for instance, is a lot more movement and exposure over time. And I guess people notice it as like a oil painting or watercolors. And for me, is actually seeing a country with your eyes closed is an emotional connection to a photograph, and which speaks the same on country, where you can go out and, you know, you notice changes on the landscape over time and over the seasons. And a lot of people, I guess, just go for a walk or something and just, oh, it looks beautiful. But sometimes you just have to, yeah, really connect, slow down to feel that emotion. And that's where, you know, you feel that connection. And so, you know, if bushfires or, you know, which is a good and bad thing, but then also, you know, development, where a lot of the areas which is my country around Broome just getting developed, and you know, it is sad. I at times try to explain to people, you know, sometimes you don't need a new boat ramp or you don't need a car park or whatever it else, you know, there's enough around. Sometimes you have to leave the beauty what's there available, otherwise you're gonna have to go out further and further to feel that connection to country.
Michael, I know you've moved to Melbourne now. You must really, particularly now with COVID, you must miss that country. You must miss Broome.
Yeah, it's totally different in landscape-wise. You know, I've never been a fan of big trees and forests because you can't see the country. All you can see is trees. I miss my horizons, you know, as a photographer, you know, I love my horizons, so I can see the big storm clouds rolling in, the red dirt you know, all those things. So being in Melbourne has, I've given myself a challenge of, you know, going out, seeing as much as I can, you know, walking on trails as much as I can, trying to connect to foreign land, I guess, in a way. I'm starting to see the beauty, even though it feels foreign, but definitely missing home. But like I said, the more time I've spent walking around here, I definitely can see the beauty here where, you know, the mob here, this is their home. This is what they find beautiful and what they connect to. And I'm happy that I've given myself that time to try and feel that same connection.
I want to thank you both. Look, I've had a look at your work, both of your work. It's amazing. If anyone can be able to see it as well, I think they won't have wasted their time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Thanks. Judith Crispin and Michael Jalaru-Torres have been my guests in the drawing room. And if you're in Canberra, you can see their work as part of Where I Stand, which is on display at Cambry at ANU and is produced by Ambush Gallery in Cambry at ANU. And we'll place links to Michael and Judith's work also on our website.